Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I am Don Allen here today. Looks like myself by myself because Jonathan Mason is at a golf tournament this morning for the big, I don't know what they call it here, the 2K, 3K, or 10K golf tournament. So he's out there doing his thing, and we're going to do our thing right here on Blog Talk Radio. I appreciate everyone listening and tuning in right now as we get our broadcast up for Facebook Live. Give me a second here. We're going to go ahead and talk about a lot of this stuff that's going on. It's happening in Minneapolis and St. Paul, et cetera, and things like that. And I'm going to go ahead and start the Facebook Live feed now since I forgot I was doing things. Let me just see here. Live video. Do a live video. Let's see if we can get a live video going here on the program this morning. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. You're listening to Our Black News as I get everything set up last minute. Sorry about that, but, you know, that's how things roll sometime. That's how things really do roll sometime. And we're here today to talk about a lot of the stuff that's going on in the Twin Cities, and I'm glad that you're here and that you've joined me this morning. I had a little technical difficulty. I got a text 2 minutes from the show saying that my co-host is at a golf tournament, so he will not be joining us this morning right away, but that's perfectly okay because I'm here. I can handle this by myself. Been doing this by myself for a long time, and I don't mind. We got a lot of stuff happening here in Minneapolis and St. Paul that we want to get to, that we want to talk about. One of the things that's going on is there's been a huge uptick in shootings and stabbings, et cetera, that lead to death in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And the Office of Crime Prevention and their crime prevention specialists might have some challenges in the upcoming month in justifying their existence in the city of Minneapolis. And I want to make some valid points here. One thing that's going on, as a crime prevention specialist, you engage in what's going on in your city, and you think of solutions to stem the crime, to stop the crime, to make sure that, you know, these things aren't happening, or find out the sources, triage the sources, and then make sure that, you know, there's some kind of community engagement. But I think these people are scared of their shadows, and they will not bust a grate. And so that's pretty interesting to hear and to read and listen to the folks in the city of Minneapolis kind of crime prevention office that really don't have a clue. And as more people get murdered, as in St. Paul this week, we had a grandmother who was executed, shot in the head. And I mean, I don't know what you think about that, but you know, you get grandmothers getting shot in the head in St. Paul, in any place, anywhere in the United States, is a bad thing. While I have another sip of coffee. This is my first cup of coffee, and if you're like me, you like to have your coffee in the morning, and, you know, and it's just an important part of the day. So Jonathan is out at the Theodore Worth Golf Course doing the 10K Foundation Golf Tournament. They have a series of activities going on, and they invite you to be a part of that. And they're having something tonight, a happy hour. And hopefully Jonathan will sneak in here sometime in the next 45 minutes and let us know. As you know, the Twin Cities Metro, two men face felony charges, arson charges, for burning up that Wells Fargo off Nicollet and Lake Street in South Minneapolis during the uprising post-George Floyd killing by the police officers. And so that's going to be pretty interesting to see how all these things play out, because it seems like the feds in the city are really going after these people that burnt down a lot of stuff. And I don't think they have the the money to cover any of this, if you know what I mean. And it's going to be really interesting to find out what actually happens. Our call-in number here is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Good morning, Ms. Rebecca White. Good morning, Mr. Meyer. Again, Jonathan Mason is hanging out at the golf tournament for the 10K Foundation, and he might pop in, he might pop out. You know, that's okay, whatever he decides to do, but we really want to look for events on Facebook and join this solid foundation. These are a group of guys whose fellows led by Mr. Royce White, who is sincere about changing the trajectory of the community, and he's no joke. He's an all-around stand-up guy. I like him. I had a chance to talk to him on the phone for about 15 minutes. And, you know, it's very seldom that I talk to someone that is authentic, you know, especially when they're in the community. We have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits across Minnesota that are not really functioning well, including schools. And so to talk to Mr. Royce White of the 10K Foundation, and he tells me all these plans and what they're doing and how they're financing it, and it just seems solid, and I would get behind this brother and or alongside of him and work with him to make this 10K Foundation even bigger, because it's a great thing. One of the things I want to start off talking about today is the school reopening and the, well, not reopening, but distance learning. And also the kids, the little ones, the elementary school kids, the kindergartners, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth. I have a second grader and a fourth grader. And I personally, as a parent and a school teacher, am not prepared. I am pulling out all the stops to see if my wife and I can hire tutors to come out, because my wife, who's a professor at the University of Minnesota, has to teach also. And, you know, this we're deciding things like, are we going to send them to Discovery Club? Are we going to keep them at home? Are we all these things that, you know, cost money, and there's no price break because they're charging you the same thing for Discovery Club that they charged last year. And it's really a costly endeavor to send your kids outside of the home when there's no school. And so we're in the midst of that, as are many parents at this point, deciding what they're going to do during the summer, during the school year, with their children. And it just seems like there was a study done not too long ago. It's posted on my Facebook page that more than half of the kids in Minneapolis and St. Paul do not have reliable internet connections. And that becomes a problem when there is synchronous. Synchronous learning is when the teacher is online and that class of students are expected to be online during that 30-minute, 45-minute window for instruction. I had little success in the spring. I had a little bit more success in the summer. First session, second session, you know, there's a lot of the students just, you know, were sporadic. But how do we deliver this message to our students that they need to be online with their teachers, communicating, making things happen? Again, our number is 347-426-3904, and I'm going to bring in a friend of the show from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis. Mr. M is going to hang out with me. Mr. M, how are you, sir?
Very good. Very good. Good morning. I like your intro on schools. This is a very, very trying thing for our parents and around the nation, and it looks like it's pretty disjointed. All schools seem to be doing something a little bit different.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to agree with that. You know, yesterday President Trump signed something or pushed some agenda to make teachers essential employees, meaning that we have to go to work, and we still don't know how that will play out because that's from a federal level that, no pun intended, trumps the state and local level. And, you know, I went and had, Mr. M, I went and took a COVID-19 test. My whole family did. We were all negative. And I just think that in some shape or form, with so many kids, especially children, our Hispanic Latino brothers and sisters, our Black brothers and sisters, our Somali brothers and sisters, our Asian brothers and sisters, our Native American Indigenous brothers and sisters, and all these groups of people that don't have reliable internet. This thing to me, Mr. M, seems like it's going to implode on itself before it gets started, you know. And with that said, there's a need for a massive hub. We have a big giant Walmart sitting empty on University Avenue at Pascal because, you know, Walmart pulled up and got out of St. Paul even before the burning and stuff like that. They were long gone, and there are some several concerns about that, and I'm just going to edge in there a little bit and then pull out. When a major box store pulls out of a community, you need to look at the political leaders in that community and ask what the hell is going on. Because there's no way Walmart on University Avenue should have ever closed. Do you agree with that assessment, Mr.
It was packed. Every time I go there, I mean, it was packed with a variety of diverse people. Maybe that's one of the reasons. I have no idea why they would close a store like that in that location. But then they build the, what is that, soccer something there? What is the Alliance? Is that what it is? Is that how you say it, Don? Alliance?
Yep. And the stadium is, it's really funny because I told my wife, we were driving in the car and we were just kind of like, not necessarily sightseeing, but just, you know, we moved to I was born in St. Paul. My wife was born in D.C., but we moved back to St. Paul from Columbia Heights 2 years ago and to a really nice neighborhood, 2 blocks away from Hamline University, and just really mellow. And, you know, less than a mile from us, we have all this damage and destruction. And we looked over at that Alliance, however they pronounce it, that field, and there was no damage. There was no spray paint, no burning, no broken windows, but it was less than 100 feet from the Foot Locker and all that other stuff that got robbed, raided, and burnt up and looted. And I just like, wow. And then you look at it, and it's really funny. There's a seafood boil restaurant right there in that little strip mall. And just recently, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was either this week or last week, the owner said that, you know, the company that leases it out was not renewing the leases because Alliance Field plans on building something big and mighty there. I know there's plans for a hotel, some different things that are going on there. And it's very interesting because, you know, gentrification has started slowly. And you could see the effects in St. Paul as well as Minneapolis. And we'll get to Minneapolis in a second. But this area is changing, I wouldn't say rapidly, but it's on pace to be a lot different in less than 6 months. Go ahead, Em, your comment.
Well, yeah, they've taken over St. Paul, and they're doing the same thing in South Minneapolis. This, you know, the unfortunate George Floyd situation is just going to reverberate all through the Twin Cities. But the whole gentrification, yeah. It's funny, I was on an interview earlier in the week with a filmmaker, Craig Rice, and another, Dan Bergen, and we were talking about the effects of 35W and 94 on our cities. Now, St. Paul has done a really good job. Marvin Anderson and those fellows there have done a really good job of commemorating what they took away in the Rondo. But we haven't really here in Minneapolis. And I think we're slower in some ways in the Black community in Minneapolis. That's just a personal comment. You don't have to listen to it. It's just an observation. But the 35W has done the same thing in South Minneapolis because we used to live all in the areas where the freeways were, and we were almost always displaced by a freeway or construction or something coming through and pushing us in another area. And it's so funny that when we moved finally far south Minneapolis, I knew almost all of the people because we had all been pushed from downtown all the way out of the areas. And that's the same kind of thing that goes on with that Alliance, and they're just cutting up St. Paul, the Midway area, which was a great little shopping area. There was Ward's, there was Walmart came in, there was Cub. All that's gone. So then you have food deserts, and it's like our areas, it's like we're expendable. We're disposable. We can just be moved around like chess pieces.
Yeah, and part of that is, you know, the community not really having a voice. One thing I'm concerned about in St. Paul, and like I said, we'll get to Minneapolis in a minute, is that there are no community benefit agreements with any of these private or public developers, especially Alliance Field. Alliance Field was all private money, and when you're coming with private money, you can basically do what you want to do because you can skirt the participation numbers, the minority ethnic participation numbers. And when I say that, I know a lot of my conservative friends go, oh, man, here we go again. The minorities in work. But the point is that things were set up by the state by some really smart people a long time ago because they knew that even the public projects would not make an effort to hire people that did not look like the mainstream. So at some point, I think that the city, the mayor, the city council, the commissioners for this area should have some kind of community benefit agreement that not only gives people an opportunity to work in that area, in those fields, but also make sure that the people that they hire are qualified. And that's a big point. There are a lot of qualified contractors in the Black, Hispanic, Latino, Asian community that see very little economic stimulus from working, you know, elbow grease, that's continued to go on for a long time in the Twin Cities, especially in Minneapolis. But this time, I think, you know, and getting back to your point, I think this time there should be something done where there's an intentional community benefits agreement, CBA they call it, that will adopt some help. Because there's several schools within earshot, or eyeshot, I should say, of Alliance Field that could benefit for some historical context. I remember it was really funny, Em. A couple of years ago, they were talking about putting a land bridge over 94 between Lexington and Snelling. And if you know anything about land bridges, I didn't at the time, but I did do a lot of research. I thought that it was hilarious because, again, they were pandering to the people that were fussing about, you know, what was going on in St. Paul and how we were going to collaborate with the community. And the best that they could come up with was doing this land bridge. Of course, that idea died, you know, a year or two ago, as soon as it came out. But then again, there's opportunities for, you know, the economic wheel of the city of St. Paul to get in lockstep with the community. And because winter is right around the corner. And Mr. M, I'm going to tell you, I've never seen as many homeless or what I identify in my mind as homeless people standing on the corner of Snelling and University, Lexington and University, and 94, both places, and families. I mean, I was just shocked the other day, Em, when I'm driving down the street. I usually keep my wallet in my little cup holder thing. And there was a father, there were a mother, and two boys, probably 9 and 10, and a girl that couldn't be any older than 6 or 7. And it just broke my heart. And, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I mean, my God, I'm a teacher, you know, and we don't make a lot of money in the Twin Cities. And so I'm looking at them and I'm saying, well, I can't just drive by because I just can't drive by and look at them at the stoplight and not doing anything. And I know a lot of that is emotional, but I just reached in and gave them some of what I had in the car. And that's just good luck, you know. But you can't really do that with a family in the wintertime. And I wish the people of St. Paul, the Ramsey County Commissioners, the St. Paul City Council, and also the mayor takes another look at homelessness in the Twin Cities and does something about this because it's getting off the hook ridiculous as I log back into my computer here. It's getting really ridiculous, and I don't know how these folks are going to end up, and I'm really worried about it at this point. Again, our calling number is 347-426-3904. If you have any comments, suggestions, criticism, or you just want to challenge us for the hell of it, come on, go ahead. And I was getting ready to talk about him. This is karma, because I was getting ready to talk about this guy in St. Paul, and he posted something on the page here. John Thompson. John Thompson is getting drugged through the ashes of the mainstream media in a way for people to try not to vote for him. And
I saw that.
This is strategically done by media and by some of these political handlers. But I'm just going to tell you right now, we have to have John Thompson in office in St. Paul. We have to have people like John Thompson in office in Minneapolis, because what John Thompson's going to bring to the table is, if he doesn't know something, he's going to bring the people in that know. They're going to give him an objective view of whatever the subject is. That way, he's going to make an informed decision as a city council person or state rep to make sure that what needs to happen, happens. So I'm looking at the hype. I know John Thompson. He's a good brother. And the stuff that's been going on that he's protesting is legit. You can't go and tell people that you can say these words or that words or this words. I mean, everyone heard the word ass or the F-U-C-K word. I mean, kids in high school use those words. So don't get bent out of shape because a politician or someone running for office uses those words. Since when do you have so much bouginess that you get offended by every damn thing out of everybody's mouth, you know? And that having that groupthink mindset is absolutely nuts. You know, take a chill pill, back off. You don't have to vote Republican. You don't have to vote Democrat. You have to vote the people that answer your questions. And for me, Mr. M, that might be a Republican. That might be a Democrat. That might be a Green. That might be an Independent. Just depending on who I get to reach out to. Another thing is that you had an unprecedented amount of people of color, especially women, black women, running for office. I salute all those black women that ran for office.
Did any of them gain some traction? I haven't really heard. There wasn't a lot of them in my area, so I don't know if they gained
maybe Ms. Devonna Pittman, who works hard for that Hennepin County Commissioner, I think it's District 1, Brooklyn Center, that area up there. She came through. She'll get in. But I don't think the rest of them got in. And there's many reasons, and I don't want to demonize them, but because I'm looking at it from a marketing point of view and also a political point of view. But, yeah, if you're going to run for office and you're going to get bougie because you think it's a celebrity status, you're going to lose every time. You got to do the work. You got to do the door knocking. You got to do the mailers. You got to raise money. You got to engage the community where they are. You got to diagnose the system that you're trying to affect and stay in the game. Don't pull yourself out of the game because it's never a celebrity. You'll never see John Thompson turn into a celebrity. Whereas you might see some people on the current city council and Congress and, you know, be celebrities. You know, and those are the kind of people we need are the people that are going to sit there and that are going to work. Go ahead. What's your thoughts, Mr. M?
Well, yeah, I was glad to see you. I thought it was a real good, move by the women to get into the game. And I think we should really look at it and give a real hard look at these politicians, because well, what we see going on in our communities is that, as you said, we don't have a voice. And that's why I'm waiting
exactly.
for some of these politicians to really come up and really campaign on that platform, that we want to give the community a voice. We want to do – they're there to work for us. But I think that whole idiom of that working arrangement has been pretty much blown away. They're pretty much working for themselves. They want airtime. They want – and you never get things done. The things continue to just get worse and worse. And then the homelessness, like you were saying, here in Minneapolis, at Powderhorn Park, there was an encampment that was just huge, which is right off of Lake Street. I mean, there was like 500 people or more at
wow.
Powderhorn Park. And so
they cleared that out, Powderhorn Park. But check this out. Yesterday my wife had to go into the office, and so where she parks at is a long walk to her building. So I said, well, why don't we all just hop in the car and drive over there? So we hopped in the car and drove over there so we could pull up in front where it's a shorter walk to her building, and then she could take the elevator up or whatever. And I says, wow, we just got done camping up north in Chippewa Falls or Chippewa National State Forest. And I said, let's take a little drive along this river road, parkway, that parkway there that runs along the Mississippi River. It will remind me, you know, we just got back Tuesday this week, and it will remind me of all those great memories we had of there kayaking, fishing, hiking, burning, you know, all that, you know, some nostalgia. And as soon as we go down the hill over there and take that right to get on that Mississippi or that parkway going along the Mississippi, you know, we pop up around the corner, and there's like 10 or 15 tents that have never been there before.
Wow.
And
wow.
Over there, oh, wow, this is another homeless encampment. Now, I'm not capping on them, dogging them out. People need a place to stay. I get that. If that's open, hell yeah, you're going to pinch your tent there, period.
Sure.
I totally support that. But I don't think, with seeing that just made me realize that our politicians, one, have no idea. Two, they're lost in the woods and misunderstood. Three, there needs to be an effort by not only local, the counties, but by the state and by the feds to put these people in housing before November 25th, when it gets really cold here, right, in Thanksgiving, when we get that first snowfall. And there's no effort. There's nothing being done to even address this. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
No, that's going to be the day of reckoning, you know, when the hawk blows in. And they at Powderhorn, you know, they gave them an eviction notice, and they weren't out by the 2 weeks. And so they just came with bulldozers, and they just threw all their little stuff away. They just put all stuff in dumpsters and moved them out. But then many of them came to King Park, and I'm sure you're familiar with King Park. It used to be called Nicollet Field, right on 42nd.
Baseball, soccer, Neon Central. That was our field for all our sports.
Sure. And there are tents there now. The encampment is really entrenched there, and they're also doing some other things right on that corner of Nicollet Avenue. They're going to end the Great Currens Restaurant, which used to be. I used to play sports there at Nicollet, and if we won the game, we could go over to Currens and get a malt.
Yeah, those make the best malt at Currens. Yes.
But they're going
to tear that
and build 100 units of an apartments there. It's supposed to be affordable. Which, affordable for whom? And I think
this
homeless thing, see, like you're saying, Dan, we've never seen anything like this in this city, in these cities. But we grew up here. We've never seen homeless people.
Exactly. And we have a caller. Let's get this caller. Caller, last four is 4644. You're live on Our Black News with myself. And Mr. M, what's your question, comment, or concern?
How you doing, Ron?
This is Don.
Don,
go
one
ahead.
Of the two. I was looking at your topic, what happens to Black America after the 2020 election?
Yes.
And I think what would be more appropriate, what happened to some Black Americans?
I can see that.
Yes, it should be, because, you know, myself, I'm conservative, and the present administration that's in there now, I approve of, and a lot of Blacks do.
Okay.
But if you hear, and I'm not on you only, but people speak like this ethnic group, this particular segment of the population is all the same, which they're not. And I'm going to tell you, I think that a lot of problems, one of the reasons you don't see this advancement is because they're not looked at like that. And when you are, let me take a candidate, for instance. I'll take John Lewis. We all know him. John Lewis was a good person for civil rights. For business and things of that nature, he was terrible. And that's where the problem comes in, because those that's taking one step forward is then sliding back two steps, because they're supporting those that actually is doing them detrimental harm. And I heard someone speaking about tutoring on you, and I was trying to do some other things on your show. That's what's needed, the improvement of the education among this ethnic group, where they can retain the remarkable skills and professions, where they can bid for and vie for higher-paying professionals, wage and salary positions. Then, hopefully, that discussion about the disparity in wealth and income will begin to diminish. I mean, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, could I ask a question, caller,
but here goes what I want. I have to interject this in here.
Mm-hmm.
When
and you you in Minnesota, by the way. I'm not, so go ahead. You know more about that state than I do.
Minnesota and maybe some other areas, but when did education not become important in the black community? I am not saying for everyone, but I was talking with a fellow educator yesterday, and he's working on his doctorate, and he's trying to get a research question together for qualitative research study, and he was trying to tackle that, you know, why aren't black communities, black folks, even black organizations at some extent, like the NAACP and Urban League, concerned about education? And let me put that in context for you. So if you go down to the southern states, past Chicago, St. Louis, down, and you look at those executive directors of the NAACP and the Urban Leagues, they are engulfed and entrenched and full of education. You come to Minnesota, you look at the leaders of the NAACP and the Urban League and the folks that are supposed to, they don't have the academic acumen to tear their way out of a plastic or paper bag. And we keep getting these knuckleheads here in charge. But again, the Urban League in Minneapolis, I can speak intelligently as an authority on this, at some point between 1970 and 1982, they felt the middle class was not their target audience. That's because
you know what the Urban League was formed, don't you? It was formed in order to prepare people for the workplace.
The middle class, yes. And through preparing people for the workplace, you had a bustering middle class that would go off and start businesses and that would hire the lower one-third of the community, and then you had a cycle that was And soon as they took focus off the middle class, and because the federal government says, hey, and the city and the state and the county, we got all these grants, but you got to be helping these poor people that don't have jobs. And I'm not knocking them. I'm not demonizing them, because I don't want this to be taken out of context and used against me. But what I'm saying is that without the strong black and brown middle class, your community sinks, and those in the middle class fall off. Whereas if you
That's what A.G. Gaston done. A.G. Gaston.
Who's that? Yeah.
Arthur George Gaston out of Birmingham. He's established
a
businessman in Birmingham, Alabama.
Insurance
he
company.
Started.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You wanted to speak, sir. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to just trumpet what you're saying with A.G. Gaston in Birmingham. My mother was born and raised in Birmingham, graduated from Parker High School there. I heard all the stories of Mr. Gaston, insurance companies, owned a variety of businesses in the Birmingham area. But this was really going on in a lot of cities, a lot of big cities where blacks moved into. But all of a sudden this, from freeways, from redlining, it's just been a massive assault on our people. And we used to fight back with things like the Urban League and the NAACP to make sure that we were doing things for our people. But for some reason, these things have really dissipated, and I think it just needs a new reforming, for my opinion.
Well, I don't care for the NAACP other than its legal wing, because NAACP, and I can show you paperwork, where they come out against things like school choice and for businesses to adopt students in deprived areas, and all they ask is that what they do is merely tax deductible against their net income, their gross income. NAACP is against those things. And they're against school choice. The one reason I voted for Donald Trump is because of school. Now, let me say this. My children don't need that. Yes. My children don't want to have to worry about it. But by me seeing what would help those that's disadvantaged shows that I do have a heart for caring, because it would help it would help alleviate the problem, because you have students that are sitting in classroom now in your traditional public school that don't belong there. They are way more ahead. No matter if they're coming from a tent under a bridge, whatever the parents and the family is doing in order to prepare their child is working because they don't belong there. But they have to stay there, and thus, look what your outcome is. Your outcome is all the same. Well, that one child, and you can multiply that probably by 1,000, could have went on and became those that can qualify and demand those high-paid wages and salary jobs. Then you wouldn't have to have so many immigrants in this country that's taking those positions.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely correct. But, you know, on the flip side of that, you know, like you said, the topic was, you know, for this show was what happens to Black and Brown America, more particularly Black America in this case, after the 2020 election. And because we are being pandered to at a very high level from the Democrats and maybe not so much, but a little, the GOP. And I've never had a president to send me a check in the mail or deposit in my account. And so looking critically at both tickets, it's like, how do you get to the point to make a decision that's rational, that's going to benefit your future, when you really don't know, well, you do know both sides and how they collaborate or engage you until after the election? Now, right now, I could call some politicians up and say, hey, we need blah, 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 blah. And if they're running for office, they're going to say, yeah, okay, let's get that done. Let's just write this out. Let's figure this out. But if I was to do this next year in July, there'd be no interest. I probably wouldn't even
call
back.
The reason why, and we just talk about Black people, because this can apply to other ethnic groups too. Blacks do politics. Mm-hmm. Too many do politics the wrong way.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to sit Ron down. We're a member of an association to represent a part of industry. And we all are operating in it, and we recognize the pitfalls. And the pitfalls are some of the things that at a federal level can be solved, at a state level can be solved. So I'm going to sit Ron down, a group of the association. We're going to tell Ron what to do. We're going to send you off to Congress. We're going to send you off to the State House. I'm going to give you an example of that. When Harvey Gantt was the mayor, I guess it was Harvey that was the mayor of New York. Might have not been Gantt, but y'all know who I am, the Black man.
Yeah.
The you had street vendors, just like Eric Gardner, was on the streets selling their merchandise in front of the Korean businesses that were selling the same merchandise inside. The Koreans got together and formed the Korean Association. They pulled the mayor off to the side and said, we need to get rid of these people.
Yeah.
And they contribute to the mayor. And so within a period of time, you had New York police officers on horseback coming down the sidewalks and running these people off. That's the way it's supposed to be done. You can't elect a politician. Then you're going to go to them and trying to get something out of them, which they probably can't produce anyway. But at the same time, other businesses are buying those politicians out from beneath your feet. That's what control politics is, business. Blacks can't even control the daggone church, let alone a politician's campaign. I mean, think about it.
That's
we can't be Ron, you can't be having a conversation. Right now, you're in the 10 o'clock hour. All right, at the 11 o'clock hour, we're talking about how poor blacks are. Well, if they're poor, how are these poor at 11 o'clock was going to fund these politicians at 10 o'clock?
true. And it takes that base, that dollar, that economic base for a group of black businessmen and women to go to these politicians and sit them down and says, hey, this is what we're looking at. This is what we want. I know in the Twin Cities, there's, you know, caller, we lost Prince's whole estate, Paisley Park, to the organization that runs Elvis's estate down in Memphis, because there was no solid black organization here in this town or people that would get together and say, okay, well, you're talking about 30, 40, 50 million, whatever. Yeah, we want to keep Paisley Park as a Minneapolis, Minnesota legacy thing, or it's in Chanhassen, but keep Prince's name here, his merchandising, the right, you know, and it could have benefited the community. But this,
yeah, it could have.
Is like, yeah, and but this is like here in Minnesota, if we don't have that economic base or those people that can get together and say, okay, we want to keep Prince and his legacy in Minnesota. We don't want everybody, because, you know, his brothers and sisters, anything that they get, they sell it as quick as they can. They're arguing about money here, arguing about, and they basically don't have that much, period, because of the quick money they made. And that's understandable. Your brother's Prince, he has a vault of thousands and thousands of songs that haven't been released, worth probably $1 billion with Paisley Park. You know, you want your cut and walk away because you're not that talented, okay? You're not going to be able to be a Prince. There's one Prince in a lifetime, you know.
You know, Black Lives Matter is a brand. I hope you know that now, don't you? When you go to sports events, you see the signs out there on the walls and along with other advertisement. I was watching Serena Williams at a tennis match somewhere the past weekend. There was a BLM poster on the walls. And, of course, on the basketball court, you see them on the floor. They are paying for that advertisement. That ain't free.
Oh, yeah. No.
And the companies that donate this money to this organization, and they turn around buying advertisement space, well, these companies are getting the money right back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to put, for example, in the new stadium in downtown Minneapolis, the People's Stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, I think for you to get signage anywhere in there, you better come in there and sit down with at least a check for 200 G's,
okay?
Period. They ain't volunteering, oh, yes, Black Lives Matter. We're going to put your sign right over here next to Nike. No, it ain't happening like that. You're going to have to pay.
It's nothing more than a ploy.
Yeah. You're going to have to pay for that branding. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then on the other hand,
okay.
Well, go ahead and you finish talking about the branding.
Go ahead. I have a delay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But then you're talking about the you got black conservatives in this country, and they do it because of their interest. It ain't that they hate somebody, it's their interest. And their interest is what the politician has been told to do or can do. They talk about Donald Trump like a dog. If Donald Trump was a black man, race cars would be flying all over the place all day long on some of these news media. I don't even listen to it. Well, let me give you an example. Marion Barry of D.C., was a crackhead, but he produced black millionaires as a mayor. I don't care what he was on, who he went to the hotel, he performed. Guess what? He's human. Maynard Jackson down there in Atlanta, Georgia. Look how many millionaires he produced. During the building of the airport, he reached out his arm and pulled in. He pulled in an armful of the money and said, this is going to black contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they said. I don't give a care about what they do. Look at James Brown. James Brown, Godfather of Soul, he beat the hell out of Tammy Terrell. He was caught in bed with her at 16, when she was 16. Is anybody tearing down his statues? Pulling up his nameplates? David Ruffin beat the heck out of her, too. Are they taking up his nameplates? in University of Missouri, they talk about taking down Chuck Berry's statue because he had cameras in the bathroom, women's bathroom, in his restaurant out in St. Charles, Missouri.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm. That's crazy that you say that because I have a bunch of money in my pocket and it's green pieces of paper with presidents that own slaves. I don't see nobody throwing that away.
No, they're not. So here's the thing. Leave people alone. If they respect something, you want them to respect you too. If not, it's going to be tit for tat. And when it's tit for tat, when you're talking about a segment of the population that we already complaining about at the 10 o'clock hour about how, no, at 11 o'clock hour about how poor they are and disparity in income and wealth, you cannot compete with that, nor do you want to be using your precious dollars in that manner.
You're absolutely right. Again, you're listening to Our Black News. We have Mr. M. We have a caller from out of town. And Jonathan will be back with us next week, hopefully. He's at a golfing event for the 10K Foundation with Mr. Royce White. Our calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And caller, I apologize. Not this caller, but someone called, and I wasn't looking at this monitor. And if you want to call back, I'll get you in. This is a great conversation. And we're kind of at the point now where we're talking about, you know,
I'm going
to
talk about
some
solutions now. I'm going to talk about
solutions.
See, I don't like to talk about. We got to have solutions. And my solution is this.
Yes. And the solutions, there has to be some kind of. You know, I'm really concerned, as a teacher, I'm really concerned about education. I'm concerned about getting back in the classroom. I don't want to die of COVID or anything like that. But there are some concerns about the kids in the school that look like me. And how do we get back, you know, M and caller, I know you've seen those pictures of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s where you had black mm-hmm. kids outside playing in suits and ties, shirts and ties, and they didn't go out of the house unless they were cleaning as a tick, no matter where they got the clothes from. And how do we get back to a point where education becomes key in our community? Because it seems like we have three lost generations between the ages of 18 and 45 years old that aren't really concerned, don't do a lot of academics at home at all whatsoever, and are pretty much – you know, not at the economic level that they should be. So how do we, you know, speaking of solutions, how can we get back on track? And we're going to have to do it rather quickly because if we don't, with this distance learning and this other stuff that's going on, it's going to implode on itself because our students are already, their learning loss is somewhere above 60% right now, which means there's a lot of reviews they have to go on before you can even move into a huge lesson. And people aren't understanding that. This is not school as normal. You go in and you figure out where they're at. But again, my question to both of you, Mr. M and caller, how do we get to the point in the black community again where education becomes key, economic development becomes key, but also we deal with these politicians in office who now have some kind of celebrity status versus working for the people. You know, how do we fix that? Why don't you go ahead, M,
well,
speak on that.
Go ahead, Mr. M.
Firstly, I would just like to hear the caller's solution because as I was saying earlier, I was on a show where they kept talking about the disparities in the Twin Cities and how the racial disparities have gotten to a point where for black people, this is a worse area than historically Mississippi has been. So I'm interested
yes.
in solutions. I know we're at the bottom, but I want to know how we're going to come up.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Minnesota's been a test case for a long time. You guys know that. Another place
yeah.
was Shakers, Ohio. They was a test case, too, trying to saw those problems. But it still has to be academics. You got to take that child and evaluate that child and see what direction what inner inept that that child has. You also have to look at what's going to be in demand. And we know it's the STEM fields. We know it's going to be artificial intelligence. We know it's going to be aviation. So then we have to train those children for those type of positions. You have to start early. Why is it that you let them kids go in the basketball court and shoot 100 free throws so they can improve on their accuracy and their proficiency, but they can't go home at night and do 100 math problems? That don't make any sense. No sense whatsoever. You have to do that. If you don't have a smart people, then they're going to be subjected to anything, especially crime. Target them. They have to be targeted. My kids were targeted into engineering. I said, no, this is what you're going to do. My last grandson, I had him doing the dance, African dance and drum. I said, he's going to be a good little baseball. Well, that's what I've done with him from two. I trained him in baseball, engineering, the math. If he need tutors, we got tutors for him. We took him every place. We exposed them to everything. Locomotives, aviation, pyramids. We exposed them to every museums we went to. At your local university, they have all sort of lectures that's going on. Take your children to these lectures so they can see how people convey information and listen to how they properly use the English language in order to communicate. If you're
absolutely
a pilot, you can't talk to the tower and say, "Yo, man, I'm ready to land." That just don't work that way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Hey, caller and Mr. M, hold on. We have another caller that called back that I missed before. I would like to get them in since we have about 9 more minutes left. Stand by. Caller, last 45065, you're live on Our Black News. What's your name and question, comment, or concern?
Oh, I was just listening in, but I didn't really catch the main gist of your conversation. I guess one concern I have, you all were talking about the money and Marion Barry and Jackson, Mayor Jackson. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately,
right.
Those types of mayors are a dime a dozen, and we don't produce those type of mayors who have that kind of concern for our community anymore, unfortunately, because as you mentioned, Marion Barry definitely had a drug problem, but as you mentioned, he supported the youth. Sooner or later, those youth become of a voting age, and he supported them by providing them summer jobs and summer opportunities, and sooner or later, those youth become voting adults, and they would vote for him. He was very supportive of the senior citizens. They always vote for him. Matter of fact, he even had a special concern for adults and children with special needs. So back then, we produced candidates who had a humane side to them. And many times nowadays, many of our politicians are concerned about just getting reelected after the first day of being in office. Their main concern is being reelected for the next term. And also pleasing whoever financed their campaign. Those are their two main points of emphasis. So we have to look at what can we do, as you talk about your grandson, what can we do to provide as many opportunities for our youth so they can become adults that will contribute to the community. And unfortunately, a lot of the parents don't have that kind of exposure to take their children to, say, museums or speaker series, or they may not have the appreciation of that. So we also have to work with our adults in terms of enhancing their ability to appreciate some of the opportunities that may be in front of them.
Yeah, but we had the will coming up. I mean, my grandmother was domestic in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My sister is a PhD from Harvard and Columbia. I have a master's degree. My brother played baseball for Alabama State, got his degree, and he came back to Minneapolis and coached the Minneapolis Central baseball team before they closed, and coached the Minneapolis North baseball team. See, we had a generation of people that, even though they found a way and they promoted us, and they were those same kindred spirits that worked in the schools.
Right.
My sister actually skipped the grade at Ramsey. They said, no, no, we don't. We're going to put you in. You're in the eighth. We're going to put you in the 10th grade in the magnet program. And she just went on because those teachers recognized that. And so we have to really, you know, our people. We've kind of been asleep at the wheel, from what I say.
But again, I recorded this and uploaded it with Mr. Edwards like a couple of years ago. And I just want to play this. We have less than 5 minutes left of the show. This is 2:25. And my question before I play this is, when is this going to change? This is a report from WCCO.
A new report lists Minnesota among the worst states in America for racial inequality. The website 24/7 Wall Street listed Minnesota as the second most unequal state in the country behind Wisconsin. It measured gaps between blacks and white residents in areas like unemployment, income, and home ownership. New at 10, WCCO's Jeff Wagner learned what the numbers mean and how organizations are trying to bring balance to Minnesota.
Bringing balance to Minnesota. That's the news thing. But you're hearing a lot of people, caller and Mr. talk about social justice versus economic justice. They're not talking
about economic justice. Let me say this. Mr. E, your grandmother wasn't 35 years old. But let me say this. When you got those sources talking about those issues, they mean them no good. I'm older than probably everybody on here. And I've been listening to that for decades. It means that what it is letting somebody know that whatever the plan of decreasing competition is working. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
The problems that blacks have, Nigerians ain't going to teach your children how to take power from theirs. So at least they're not even going to whites. They're not going to do it. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. You get to the point where you got conservative blacks don't want to do it neither because they are ridiculed, insulted, and called names because of their political persuasion and their ideology. If you want people to come back and help you, would not it be someone who's been to the mountaintop, even been on the other side, and have lived, experienced, and seen what's going on, and come back and tell you, this is what you need to be doing? I'm going to let you get off here, man. I'm going to try to get back with you next week.
All right.
Yeah, we'll be here next week. Appreciate you calling in. Please call back early next week so we can have this whole conversation. I might even send you a link. With me on Facebook. I'll send you a link to the Zoom conversation there and have you and him up there. But
thank you, sir.
Mr. M, I'd like to thank you for hanging out with me this hour, caller. Thank you for hanging out with me for a little while you did. And Jonathan is at the 10K Foundation Golf Tournament going on at Theater Worth Park this morning. And you guys should get over there and check it out. Mr. Royce White, who leads that 10K Foundation, is a stand-up guy. They're having a happy hour tonight. And you can get the details on Facebook. There's under the event, or just go to the 10K. Google 10K Foundation. They had such a good job that it popped up right away. So thank you. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for being here. We'll be back here next Saturday at 9:30, and you're listening, or you have listened to Our Black News. Thank you. Here's James taking us away.